Hello and welcome to this special crossover episode of the Beyond Shakespeare podcast. As you may be aware, we have been continuing our exploring sessions online via Zoom, thanks to the continuing plague, and most of that material is going out on YouTube rather than on the podcast. We're currently working on creating alternative content that primarily lives on the podcast. There are a few exceptions to this. Every so often, the videos don't come out very well as videos, so sometimes they'll come out on the podcast. But also, we're going to continue with the Endtown series. They're going to continue over Christmas with specially recorded material that we have been doing over the last month or two. And also, all of the material that we've done on John Heywood will also get released on the podcast. These will still go out as videos because we recorded them as videos and we might as well put them out as videos as well. But with some trims and tidied up audio, they will also continue going out on the podcast. We still plan to be releasing more full cast audio adaptations on the podcast soon. That is still works in progress. As I say, the plague has made production quite difficult to do. We're also working on alternative new podcast material stuff, which is quite exciting. That's going to be coming in the next week or two. Certainly it's going to be going to the patrons in the next week or so. So there is new material, different material coming and making its way to you soon. And if you'd like to support what we're doing on the podcast, then do become a patron. Go to www.patreon.com/beyondshakespeare, where a certain amount of new and exclusive as well as early releases are starting to come through now that we have sorted out how to work under plague conditions, as it were. Hoping that all you listeners at home are in fine fettle and surviving this global pandemic. And anyway, we're going to now get on to the episode itself. We're continuing a return look at John Heywood. As you will know, on the podcast, we've already done full cast audio adaptations of every single play he wrote. But what we didn't do was actually any exploring sessions, any real discussion of how the plays function outside of discussions with Professor Greg Walker and other material that we did around the plays. We didn't go through the plays and do what we do with all texts and actually discuss and go in with a certain level of ignorance and see what our immediate first impressions are. So what I've done is actually I've taken a step back from the recording of these exploring sessions on John Heywood, because I know quite a lot about him now, and have passed this over to Liza Graham, who has run, or is in the process of running, all of the John Heywood sessions, so that these will be coming out on YouTube and also on the podcast over the next few months or so. So this is a return look at John. Now, we do have not only the full cast audio adaptation, we also have a rehearsal recording that is available. And this is another session, an exploring session run by Liza and a group of like-minded individuals who will be looking through the text in their own inimitable way. So all that really remains for me to do is get out of your way and pass you over to the recording of Liza and the team.
Hello and welcome to this Beyond Shakespeare exploring session. Today we are exploring an early play by John Heywood called John the Husband, Tib his Wife, and Sir John the Priest. He lists it as a merry play. Exactly how merry it is, I guess we'll see. It does carry a content warning, or indeed a trigger warning, for domestic abuse, ample discussion of domestic abuse, and a relationship that is not lovely. But don't worry, it's a comedy, everyone ends up alive. For a given value of comedy, the sense of humor in the 1520s, 30s was a good deal more brutal than ours today. So it's a bit of a Punch and Judy show, except Punch and Judy hadn't been invented yet. We have, to read this play for you, we have a crack team of readers. First of all, playing the role of Sir John, the priest, we have...
Hi, I'm Eric, and I nearly burned myself, which is almost like running with scissors, except worse.
Thank you, Eric. Very enlightening. And in the role of Tib, the wife, we have...
Hello, I'm Emma Kemp. I am an actor based in London.
Marvellous. And playing the role of John John himself, the husband...
Hi, I'm Lisa Hill Corley. I'm from George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia, USA.
Shout out to Virginia. We have two out of four Americans in the room. Like I said, this first speech is probably the worst part of the play, content-wise. It's extremely violent sounding and extremely misogynistic, so please, you know, be aware of that. But our heading is A Merry Play Between John John the Husband, Tib his Wife, and Sir John the Priest by John Heywood. Enter John John and begin.
Godspeed you, masters, everyone. Would not he wither where my wife is gone? I pray God the devil take her. For all I do, I cannot make her, but she will go a-gadding, very much like an Anthony pig, with an old witch which lead her about hither and thither. But by Our Lady, I wove not hither, but by God's blood, were she come home unto this, my house, by Our Lady of Crome, I would beat her or that I drink. Beat her, quoth I, yea, that she shall stink, and by every stroke lay her on the ground and train her by the hair about the house round. I am even mad that I beat her not now. There is never a wife between heaven and hell which was ever beaten half so well. Beaten, quoth I, yea, but what of and she therefore die? Then I may have a chance to be hanged shortly. And when I've beaten her till she smoke and given her many a hundred stroke, think ye she will amend yet? Nay, by Our Lady, the devil speed wit, therefore I will not better at all. And shall I not beat her? No shall, when she offendeth and doth amiss and keepeth not her house as her duty is? Shall I not beat her if she do so? Yea, by cock's blood, that shall I do. I shall beat her and thwack her, I trow, for then she shall be shit the house for every woe. But yet I think, what will my neighbor say? Then he will say thus, whom chidest thou, John John? Mary, will I say, I chide my cursed wife, the veriest drab that ever bare life, which doth nothing but go and come, and I cannot make her keep at home. Then I think he will say by and by, walk or go, John John, and beat her hardly. But then unto him mine answer shall be, the more I beat her, the worse is she, and worse make her I shall. He will say then, beat her not at all. And why? Shall I say it would be wist, if she not mine own, to chastise as I list? But this is another point, worst of all. The folks will mock me when they hear me brawl. But for all that, shall I therefore to chastise my wife other the more and make her at home to tarry? Is it not that well done? Yes, by Saint Mary, that is a point of an honest man for to beat his wife well now and then. Therefore, I shall beat her. Have ye no dread? And I ought to beat her till she be stark dead. And why? But by God, because it is my pleasure. And if I should suffer her, I'll make you sure not to prevail me. Neither staff nor waster, within a while she would be my master. Therefore I shall beat her, my cock's mother, both on one side and then on t'other. Before and behind, neither shall be her boot, from top of the he to the sole of the foot. But masters, for God's sake, do not entreat for her when she shall be beat, but for God's passion let me alone, and I shall thwack her that she shall groan. Wherefore I beseech you, and heartily you pray, and I beseech you say me not nay. But I shall beat her for these ones, and I shall beat her by cock's bones, that she shall stink like a polecat. But yet, by God's body, that need that, for she will stink without any beating. For every night, when she giveth me a heating, for her issueth such a stinking smoke, that the Savior thyself almost doth me choke. But I shall beat her now without fail. I shall beat her top and tail, head, shoulders, arms, legs, and all. I shall beat her here, I trow that I shall. And by dog's body, I tell you true, I shall beat her till she be black and blue. But where the devil, trow ye, she is gone? I hold a noble she is with Sir John. I fear I am beguiled always, but yet in faith I hope well nay. Yet I almost enrage that I can so for the behavior of our gentlewoman. And yet I think, thither as she doth go, for to make some pastime and sport. But then my wife so oft doth thither resort, that I fear she will make me wear a feather. But yet I need not for fear nether, for he is her gossip, that is he. But abide a while, yet let me see, where the devil hath our gossip be begun? My wife had never child, daughter, nor son. Now if I forbid her that she go no more, yet will she go as she did before? Or else she will choose some other place, and then the matter is in an ill case. But in faith, all these words being lost, for I think the matter is done and past. And when she cometh home, she will begin to chide, but she shall have her payment stick by her side, for I shall order her for all her brawling that she repent to go caterwauling.
Okay. Whew. That's quite something. So, Lisa, how does that feel, and what do you notice as you speak the speech?
Just the difference of the times, and like how this is a comedy, and how they're just, the audience would have just been falling out of like the laughter, you know, like how this is supposed to be amusing, and you know, through our lens, it's quite awful. But then it's also so over the top that it makes me think that this is kind of more in his mind, and that she has more control than he, because he's just like flying off the handle. I'm going to do this and this and this. And does any of this stuff actually ever happen? It's, you know, what you start to wonder when you're listening to this rant.
That's a really good question. Like whether it's actually a fantasy that he has, not a particularly pleasant fantasy,
yeah.
Or whether it's something that he does in reality. And I guess we will see that as we go.
Yes,
there's a couple of linguistic things. John refers to the priest as our gossip. That meant a person that is that is the godparent of your child. So you're related, sort of like cousins. In fact, you couldn't marry your gossip, I think, without a special dispensation. And then he's like, wait, hang on. How can he be our gossip? Because we don't have any children. Whoa!
Right. What? So what's she hanging around with him for? Right. Yeah.
What is she hanging around with him for? Emma, I guess this gives the audience some impression of Tib, and I wonder what that is.
Yeah, well, she must be quite a handful, I think. But also someone who obviously doesn't seem to learn at all. No matter what he does, she's always in trouble, and just will not listen to him. And then she's driven him to this kind of ridiculous state of this kind of wild fantasy of what he needs to do. So yeah, I think, particularly by the length of this speech and the way that it builds and builds, it's quite exciting because obviously the audience are imagining this character Tib, and it gives them a chance to kind of build a picture of her in their minds before she actually appears, which is quite fun.
Yeah, and I guess we would sympathize with her probably in our time. I don't know what they would feel in theirs, you know, because the offenses he lays to her charge are pretty minor, apart from this suspicion he has with the priest. All she wants to do is leave the house whenever she wants. For us, that's pretty much a natural thing. You would hear in church every Sunday that it was a wife's duty to keep the house, and many, many wives would, I hope, not listen. Eric, any thoughts?
It sounds like sort of you could have this ultimate comedy moment where, like, you know, he's talking about her being beating him, or like sort of, you know, being this sort of very troublesome person, like, and you can imagine someone like the Miss Trunchbull from Matilda, and then up comes this like very small but fierce little woman, sort of like going, you know, like who sort of putting him down, basically bringing him back to earth. And I don't know, just like that comedy contrast would be funny. It's the rhyme helps it flow a lot, I think.
It does, and you know, Tib would be probably played by a boy actor, so small and fierce may well be a good description. But let's go into scene two and see who Tib is. Take it away, Tib, when you will.
Why, whom will thou beat, I say, thou knave?
Why, Tib, none, so God be safe.
Yes, I heard thee say, thou wouldst one beat.
Marry, wife, it was the stockfish in Thames Street, which would be good meat against Lynn. Why, Tib, what hadst thou thought that I meant?
Marry, methought I heard thee bawling. Wilt thou never leave this walling? How the devil dost thou thyself behave? Shall we ever have this work, thou knave?
What, wife? How sayest thou? It was well just of me that thou wouldst come home in safety as soon as I had kindled a fire? Come, warn thee, sweet Tib, I thee require.
Oh, John, John, I am afraid by this light that I shall be sore sick this night.
My cock's soul, now I dare say it, there lay a swan that she comes straight for Sir John. For ever she hath fetched him of a lick, she comes home and saith she is sick.
What sayest thou?
Mary, I say it is meet for a husband to go play abroad in town for an hour or two.
Well, gentlemen, go to, go to.
Well, let us have no more debate.
If he do not fight, chide and rate, brawl, and fare as one that were frantic, there is nothing that may him like.
And if that parish priest, Sir John, did not see her now and then, and give her absolution upon a bed for woe and pain, she would soon be dead.
For God's sake, John, John, do the not displease. Many a time I am ill at ease. What think'st now? Am I not somewhat sick?
Now would to God and sweet Saint Dick thou wert in the water up to the throat, or in a burning oven red hot to see, and I would pull thee out.
Now, John, John, to put thee out of doubt, imagine thou where that I was before I came home.
My percase, thou was praying at the Church of Poles upon thy knees for all Christian souls.
Nay.
Then if thou wast not so holy, show me where thy was, and make no lie.
Truly, John, John, we made a pie. I and my gossip Marjorie, and our gossip the priest, Sir John, and my neighbour's youngest daughter Anne. The priest paid for the stuff and the making, and Marjorie, she paid for the baking.
My cocks and lily wounds, that same is she, the most bawdy hence to Coventry.
What say you?
Mary, answer me to this. Is not Sir John a good man?
Yes, that he is.
Ha, Tim, if I should not grieve, but I'd have somewhat wherefore I should move thee.
Well, husband, now I do conject that thou hast me somewhat in suspect, but by my soul, I never go to Sir John, but I find him like a holy man, for either he is saying his devotion, or else he is going in procession.
Yes, round about the bed he doth go, you two together, and no more. For he to finish the procession, he leapeth up, and now lieth down.
What sayest thou?
Mary, I say he doth well, for aught a shepherd to do, as I heard tell, for the salvation of all his fold.
John, John.
What is thou would?
By my soul, I love thee too, too. And I shall tell thee, or I further go, the pie was made, I have it now here, and therewith I trust we shall make good cheer.
My cock's body, that is very happy.
But wotest who gave it?
What, the devil, reck I?
By my faith, and I shall say true then. The devil take me, and it were not Sir John.
Hold thy peace, wife, and swear no more, but I beshrew both your hearts before.
Yet, peradventure, thou hast suspicion of that was never thought nor done.
Touch, wife, let all such matters be. I love thee well, though thou love not me. But this pie doth now catch harm. Let it set upon the hearth to warm.
Then let us eat it as fast as we can. But because Sir John is so honest a man, I would that he should thereof eat his part.
That were reason, I thee ensure.
Then, since that is thy pleasure, I pray thee then go to him right, and pray him come sup with us tonight.
Shall he come hither? By cock's soul, I was accursed that I granted to that word first. But since I have said it, I dare not say nay, for then my wife and I should make a fray. But when he is come, I swear by God's mother, I would give devil to the one to carry away the other.
What sayst?
Mary, he is my curate, I say, my confessor, my friend always. Therefore, go thou and seek him by and by. Till thou come again, I will keep this pie.
Shall I go for him? Nay, I shrew me then. Go thou and seek as fast as thou can, and tell him it.
Shall I do so? In faith, it is not meet for me to go.
But thou shalt go tell him, for all that.
Then I shall tell him what thou should desirest him to come make some cheer.
Nay, that thou desirest him to come sup here.
Nay, by the road, wife, thou shalt have the worship and the thanks of thy jest that is thy gossip.
Full oft I see my husband will me rate for this hither coming of our gentle curate.
What sayest him? Let me hear that again.
Marry, I perceive very plain that thou hast Sir John somewhat in suspect, but by my soul, as far as I conject, he is virtuous and full of charity.
Faith, all the town knoweth better that he is a whoremonger, a haunter of stews, a hypocrite, and a knave that all men refuse. A liar, a wretch, a maker of strife, better than they know that thou art my good wife.
What is that thou hast said?
Mary, I would have had the table set and laid in this place or that, I care not.
Then go to, bring the trestles hither.
Abide a while, let me put off my gown, but yet I'm afraid to lay it down, for I fear it shall soon be stolen, and yet it may lay safe, and not an unstolen. It might lie here, and I liest by cock's soul, here hath a dog pissed, and if I should lay it on the hearth bare, it might have to be burned, if I were ware. Therefore, I pray you, take the pain, and to keep my gown till I come again. But he shall not have it, by my fay. He is so near the door, he might run away. But because that ye be trusty and sure, you shall keep it, and it be your pleasure. And because it is arrayed at the skirt, while ye do nothing, scrape of the dirt. Lo, now I am ready to go to Sir John, and bid him come as fast as he can.
Yea, do so without any tarrying. But I say, hark, thou hast forgot one thing. Set up the table, and that by and by. Now, go thy ways.
I go shortly, but your candlestick be not out of the way.
Come again, and lay the table, I say. What? Methinks ye have soon done.
Now I pray God that his malediction light on my wife and all the bald priest.
Now, go thy ways, and hie thee. Deist.
I pray to Christ, if my wish be no sin, that the priest may break his neck when he comes in.
Now, come again.
What mischief wilt thou, fool?
Marry, I say, bring hither yonder stool.
Now go to, a little would make me for to say thus, a vengeance take thee.
Now, go to him, and tell him plain, that till thou bring him, thou will not come again.
That pie doth burn here, as it doth stand.
Oh, go. Wash me these cups in my hand.
I go with a mischief light on my face.
Go and bid him hie him apace, and the while I shall all things mend.
This pie burneth here at this end, understandest thou?
Go thy ways, I say.
I will go now as fast as I may.
How? Come once again, I had forgot. Look, an there be any ale in the pot.
Now for vengeance and a very mischief, thou light on the bald priest and on my wife, on the pot, the ale, and on the table, the candle, the pie, and all the rabble, on the trestles and on the stool, it is much ado to please a cursed fool.
Go thy ways now, and tarry no more, for I am a-hungered very sore.
Very, I go.
Come again yet. Bring hither that bread, lest I forget it.
For time to turn the pie, for it doth burn.
Lord, how my husband now doth patter, and of the pie still doth clatter. Go now and bid him come away. I have bid thee 100 times today.
Would not give a straw, I tell you plain, if that pie wax cold again.
What? Art thou not gone yet out of this place? I had, when thou hadst been, come again in the space. But by cock's soul, and I should do thee right, I should break thy knave's head tonight.
Nay, then, if my wife be set a-chiding, it is time for me to go do her bidding. There is a proverb which true doubt proveth. He must needs go that the devil drive.
Ah, wow. wonderfully high energy there by you two. There's a pie in the house. I wonder what's in the pie. This for those listening who may or may not know this, since we have a 50% American room, this is not what an American thinks of when they hear pie. It's not a fruit pie. It's not a dessert. It's a main course. It has meat inside, and you put it on a sort of brick shelf in your fireplace. So one end is nearer the fire than the other, and you have to turn it around every so often so it doesn't get all burnt on one side. Is what John, who knows more about cooking than most husbands seem to, is rightly pointing out here. You would also not eat the crust of the pie. It was just sort of a structure to keep the contents inside and delicious. And yeah, Tib, you made a pie. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm quite proud of it. No, that was really fun. It kind of really builds an energy, and I kind of felt that as I was reading it, that just the language and the pace and the rhyme just created all this kind of energy and comedy, and suddenly Tib started coming into her own. She starts off quite kind of what me? No. And then you start seeing why John gets so scared and annoyed with her, because she really starts to get annoyed with him and starts telling him what to do, and you realize that their roles in the house might possibly be the complete opposite of what would have been the norm at the time.
What do you make of John, Lisa, as opposed to sort of that first speech and then this scene?
Oh, well, things have changed since Tim is actually in the room. We see who really runs the place, and he's still making all these threats under, like, I can imagine on stage him just, like, making all these threats under his breath, or to, like, one person in the audience, but he's too afraid to say literally anything to her, and he won't just stomp out of the house. Like, he comes back every time. He's like, but wait, you have to do these 47 other things, right? So very different than the impression we got from the opening speech.
Yeah, and Eric, as an observer, soon to be in holy orders, what do you make of this scene?
Well, it's that thing of, like, as you just said, that, you know, he kind of, it's the role reversal that makes the comedy, but also the kind of thing that there's this pie that they both want, clearly, but he's also, like, John is very sort of, like, oh, it was made by this person that I don't really like, but also we're kind of, like, the characters are basically describing, like, who's going to come next, sort of like the husband was describing Tib but the way Tib was in his head, and now they're describing the priest who is going to arrive now.
Well, yes, the scene shifts indeed to the house of the priest, where John has finally managed to get out of the house and come to the priest's house. And so begins the scene. Actually, Lisa, if you can go from your whole last speech, nay then, if my wife be set a-chiding, if that's okay. Cool. Yeah.
Nay then, if my wife be set a-chiding, it is time for me to go at her bidding. There is a proverb which true now proveth, he must needs go that the devil driveth. How now, Master Curate, may I come in at your chamber door without any sin?
Who is there now that would have me? What, John, what news with thee?
Marry, sir, to tell you shortly, my wife and I pray you heartily that each desire you with all our might that you would come sup with us tonight.
You must pardon me. In faith, I nay can.
Yes, I desire you, good Sir John, take pain this once, and yet at the last, if ye will do not at my request, yet do somewhat for the love of my wife.
I will not go for making of strife, but I shall tell thee what thou shalt do. Thou shalt tarry and sup with me, or thou go.
Will ye not go thou? Why so? Pray, you tell me, is there any disdain or any enmity between you twain?
In faith, to tell thee, between thee and me, she's as wise a woman as any may be. I know it well, for I have had the charge of her soul and searched her conscience at large. I yet never knew her but honest and wise, without any evil or any vice, save one fault. I know in her no more, and because I rebuke her now and then, therefore, she's angry with me, and hath me in hate, and yet that I do it for your wealth.
Now God yield it you, God Master Curate, and as he do send you to your health, I am bound to you a pleasure.
Yet thou thinkest amiss, peradventure, that of her body she should not be a good woman, but I shall tell thee what I have done, John, for that matter. She and I be sometime aloft, and I do lie upon her many a time and oft to prove her. Yet I could never espy that any did worse with her than I.
Sir, that is the least care I have of nine. Thanked be God in your good doctrine, but if it please you, tell me the matter and the debate between you and her.
I shall tell thee, but thou must keep secret.
As for that, sir, I shall not let.
I shall tell thee now the matter plain. She is angry with me and hath me in disdain, because that I do her oft entice to do some penance after mine advice, because she will never leave her brawling, but always with thee she is chiding and brawling, and therefore I know she hateth my presence.
Nay, in good faith, saving your reverence.
Nay, I know very well she hath me in hate.
Nay, I dare swear for her, Master Curate. But was I not a very knave? I thought surely God me save that he had loved my wife for to deceive me. And now he quitteth himself, and here I see he doth as much as he may for his life to stint the debate between me and my wife.
If ever she did or thou me any ill, now I forgive her with my free will. Therefore, John Drone, now get thee home, and thank thy wife, and say, I will not come.
Let me know now, good Sir John, where you will go to supper then.
I care not greatly, and I tell thee, on Saturday last, I and two or three of my friends made an appointment, and against this night we did assent, that in a place we would sup together. And one of them said he would bring thither ale and bread, and for my part, I said I would give them money for the making, and another said she would pay for the baking, and so we purposed to make good cheer, for to drive away care and thought.
Then I pray you, sir, tell me here, whither should all this gear be brought?
By my faith, and I should not lie, it should be delivered to thy wife, the pie.
By God, it is my house. It is at my house, standing by the fire.
Who bespake that pie I thee require?
By my faith, I shall not lie. It was my wife and her gossip Marjorie, and your good mayhap called Sir John, and my neighbor's youngest daughter Anne. Your mayhap paid for the stuff and the baking, and Marjorie she paid for the making, and Marjorie she paid for the baking.
If thou wilt have me now, in faith I will go.
Mary, I beseech your mayhap to do so. My wife tarrieth for none but us twain. She thinketh long or I come again.
Well, now, if she chide me in thy presence, I will be content and take in patience.
My cock's soul, and she once chide, or frown, or lower, or look aside, I shall bring you a staff, as much as I may heave. Then beat her and spare not. I'll give you good leave to chastise her for her shrewd burying.
And they return to John's house. We'll only pause briefly here, and then we'll just read the rest of the play in one. It's not a very long play. Sir John has let it slip what the matter is between him and Tib, and let it slip in such a way that John really has no idea.
To be honest, I'm not sure I do either, because especially that description with the, I test her, you know, I lie on her sometimes to sort of check that she's being faithful, and I'm like, that's a bit dodgy. Or did I misread that? I don't know.
No, I think you read it pretty much right. I think it is a bit dodgy. I think that's the point at which Haywood's audience might have gone, ooh.
Oh.
And you know, Tib has given none of this away, to do her credit. She's been very discreet about it. And yet, here's this priest breaking the secrets of the confessional. Having a priest be a character like this, it's very in keeping with French and Italian sort of farce. So now the priest has come round to John's house. What will be next? Take it away.
The devil take thee for thy long tarrying. Here is not a whit of water by my gown to wash our hands that we might sit down. Go and hie thee as fast as a snail, and with water fill me this pail.
Thank our Lord of his good grace, and I cannot rest long in a place.
Go, fetch water, I say, at a word, for it is time the pie were on the board, and go with a vengeance, and say thou art paid.
Ah, good gossip, is that well said?
Welcome, my own sweetheart. We shall make some cheer ere we depart.
Cocksoul, look how he approacheth near unto my wife. This abateth my cheer.
My God, would ye had the trifles, the toys, the mocks, the fables, and the knifles, that I made thy husband to believe and think thou mightest as well into the earth sink as thou couldst forbear laughing any while.
I pray thee, let me hear part of that while.
Marry, I shall tell thee as fast as I can. But peace, peace, no more. Yonder cometh thy good man.
God's soul, what have we here? As far as I saw, he drew very near unto my wife.
What? Art come so soon? Give us water now. Give us water to wash now. Have done.
Then he bringeth the pail empty.
My cock's soul, it was even now full to the brink, and it was out again, or I could think, whereof I marveled by God Almighty, when I looked between me and the light, and I spied a cliff, both large and wide. Lo, wife, here it is on one side.
Why dost not stop it?
And why, how shall I do it?
Take a little wax.
And how shall I come to it?
Marry, here be two wax candles, I say, which my gossip Marjorie gave me yesterday.
Tush, let him alone, for by the rood, it is pity to help him, or do him good.
What, Dundon, canst thou make no shift? Take this wax and stop therewith the clift.
Wax is as hard as any wire.
Thou must chafe it a little at the fire.
He that hath brought these wax candles twain is a good companion, certain.
What, was it not my gossip, Marjorie?
Yes, she's a blessed woman, surely.
Now would God I were as good as she, for she is virtuous and full of charity.
Also, God help me, and by my holy dome, she'd erratus bawd between this and Rome.
What sayest?
Mary, I chafe the wax, and I chafe it so hard that my fingers crack, but I take up the pie that here I torn, and stand long, as well it will burn.
Yea, but thou must chafe the wax, I say.
Bid him sit down, I thee pray. Sit down, good John, I you require.
Go, I say, and chafe the wax by the fire, while that we sup, Sir John and I.
And how now? What will ye do with the pie? Shall I not eat thereof a morsel?
Go and chafe the wax while thou art well, and let us have no more prating thus.
Benedicite.
Dominus.
Now go and chafe the waxy, with a mischief.
What, I come to bless the board, sweet wife. It is my custom now and then. Much good it do you, Master Sir John.
Go chafe the wax, and here no longer tarry.
It is not a very purgatory to see folks eat and may not eat a bit. By cock's soul, I am a very woodcock. This pail here, now of vengeance take it. Now my wife giveth me a proud mock.
What dost?
Mary, I chafe the wax here, and I imagine to make you good cheer. Out of vengeance take you both as you sit, for I know well I should not eat a bit. But yet in faith I might eat one morsel, I would think the matter went very well.
Gossip, John, now, how much do it you, and good do it you? What cheer make you there by the fire?
Master Parson, I thank you now, I fare well, and now after mine own desire.
What dost, John, I thee require?
I chafe the wax here by the fire.
Here is good drink, and here is a good pie.
We fare very well, thanks be our lady.
Look how the cuckold chafeth the wax that is hard, and, for his life, dareth not look hitherward.
What doth my gossip?
I chafe the wax, and I chafe it so hard my fingers cracks, and eat the smoke, put it out my eyes in two. I burn my face and ray my clothes also, and yet I dare not say one word, and they sit laughing yonder at the board.
Now, by troth, it is a pretty jape for a wife to make her husband her ape. Look of John, which maketh hard shift to chafe the wax to stop there with the clift.
Yeah, that of vengeance take ye both too, both him and thee and him also. And that ye may choke with the same meat at the first morsel that ye do eat.
Of what thing now dost thou clatter, John, or whereof dost thou the patter?
I chafe the wax and make hard shift to stop her with the pail of the rift.
So must he do, John, by my father kin that is bound of wedlock in the yoke.
What kind of bald priest crammeth in that would to God he might therewith choke?
Now, Master Parson, pleaseth your goodness to tell us some tale of mirth or sadness for our pastime in way of communication?
I am content to do it for our recreation, and of three miracles I say.
What, must I chafe the wax all day and stand here roasting by the fire?
Thou must do somewhat at thy wife's desire. I know a man which wedded had a wife as fair a woman as ever bare life. And within a senate after right son, he went beyond sea and left her alone, and tarried there about 7 a year, and as he came homeward he had a heavy cheer, for it was told him that she was in heaven. But when that he came coming home again was, he found his wife and with her children 7, which she had had in the mean space. Yet had she not had so many by 3, if she had not had the help of me. Is this not a miracle, if ever were any, that this good wife should have children so many here in this town, while her husband should be beyond the sea in a far country?
No, in good sooth, this is a wondrous miracle. But for your labor, I would that your tackle were scalding water well sod.
Peace, I say, thou lettest the word of God.
And another miracle, I shall you say, of a woman which that many a day had been wedded, and in all that season she had no child, neither daughter nor son. Wherefore, to St. Modwin she went on pilgrimage, and offered there a live pig, as is the usage of the wives that in London dwell, and through the virtue thereof, truly to tell, within a month after, right shortly, she was delivered of a child as much as I. How say you, is this not miracle wondrous?
Yes, in good sooth, sir, it is marvelous. But surely, after mine own opinion, that child was neither daughter nor son, for certainly, I be not beguiled, she was delivered of a knave child.
Peace, I say, for God's passion. Thou lettest Sir John's communication.
The third miracle also is this. I knew another woman, eke I wis, which was wedded, and had within 5 months after she was delivered of a fair daughter, as well formed in every member and joint, and as perfect in every point, as though she had gone 5 months full to the end. Lo, here's 5 months' advantage.
A wondrous miracle, so God me mend. I would each wife that is bound in marriage and that is wedded here within this place might have as quick speed in every such case.
Forsooth, Sir John, yet for all that, I have seen the day that Puss, my cat, hath had in a year kitlins 18.
Yea, did my wife, and that I have seen. But how say you, Sir John, was it good, your pie? The devil the morse of that thereof eat I. But now I see well the old proverb is true, the parish priest forgetteth that he was ever clerk. But Sir John doth not remember you how I was your clerk and helped you mass to sing and hold the basin always at the offering, yet never had half so good as clerk as I. But notwithstanding all this, now our pie is eaten up, there is not left a bit, and you two together there do sit, eating and drinking at your own desire, and am I, John, which must stand by the fire, chafing the wax, dare none otherwise do?
And we shall always sit here, we two? That were too much.
Then rise we out of this place.
And kiss me then in this stead of grace, and farewell, layman, and my love so dear.
God's body, this wax, it weighs cold again here. But what, shall I anon go to bed and eat nothing, neither meat nor bread? I have not been wont to have such fare.
Why, were ye not served there as ye are, chafing the wax, standing by the fire?
Why, what meat gave ye me, I you require?
Wast thou not served, I pray thee heartily, both with the bread, the ale, and the pie?
No, sir, I had none of that fare.
Why, were ye not served there as ye are, standing by the fire, chafing the wax?
Lo, here be many trifles in that. By cock's soul, they were as I'm either drunk or mad.
And had ye no meat, John? No had?
No, Tib, my wife, I had not a whit.
What? Not a morsel?
No, not one bit. For hunger, I trow, I shall fall in a swoon.
Oh, that were pity, I swear by my crown.
But is it true?
Yea, for a surety.
Dost thou lie?
No, so mote I thee.
Hast thou had nothing?
No, not a bit.
Hast thou not drink?
No, not a whit.
Where wast thou?
By the fire did I stand.
What didst?
I chafe this wax with my hand, whereas I knew of wedded men the pain that they have and dare not yet complain. But for the smoke put out my eyes too, I burned my face and rayed my clothes also, mending the pail which is so rotten and old that will not scant together hold. And since it is so, and since that ye twain would give me no meat for my suffragance, by cock soul I will take no longer pain. You shall do all yourself with a very vengeance for me. And take thou there thy pail now, for if thou canst mend it, let me know how.
And he hurls the pail to the floor.
A horse and knave! Hast thou broke my pail? Thou shall repent by cock's lily nail. Reach me my distaff or my clipping shears. I shall make the blood run about his ears.
John takes up a shovel full of coals.
Nay, stand still, drab, I say. Come no near, for by cock's blood, if thou come here, or if thou stir towards this place, I shall throw this shovel of coals in thy face.
Ye horse and devil, get thee out of my door.
Nay, get out of my house, thou priest whore.
Thou liest, horse and cuckold, even to thy face.
Thou liest, bald priest, even with the evil grace.
And thou liest.
And thou liest.
And thou liest again.
By cock's soul, horse and priest, thou ought to be slain. Thou hast eat all of our pie and given me naught. By cock's blood it shall full dearly bought.
At him, Sir John, or else give thee sorrow.
And how about you, whore and thief, St. George to borrow?
Here they fight by the ears a while, and then the priest and the wife go out of the place.
Ah, sirs, I have paid some of them even as I list. They have borne many a blow with my fist. I thank God I have walked them well and driven them hence. But yet, can ye tell whether they be go? For by God, I fear me they have gone together, he and she, unto his chamber, and perhaps will, spite of my heart, tarry there still. And peradventure there he and she will make me cuckold, even to anger me. And then I had a pig and the worst painter. Therefore, God, I will hie me thither to see if they do me any villainy. And thus farewell this noble company.
And that is the end of the play. bravo to our small but mighty cast of readers. That was a scene right there. That was a scene. How did it play? How did it play?
Such a come down from this confident guy who was like, I'm gonna beat her here, there, everywhere. Like, now he's watching them eat his dinner and literally burning himself with a candle.
It's a bit like the I drink your milkshake moment. That, yeah. So John, you know, that we hear that first speech, we think this guy is a monster. This guy is a straight up, he's an abuser. He's a terrible person. But no, he's only a slightly less terrible person that has ambitions towards being an abuser. He's really, he just, yeah, sits there and watches them eat the pie. Emma, did you feel like there's a lot of business to manage here, and I think a lot of it has to be managed by Tib. That, like, there's the business of the pie and the business of the candle and the business of the pail, and so I don't know, what kind of actor would it take to play Tib, do you think?
Bags of energy, and I think kind of it almost seems like pantomimic sort of set scenes, set comedic scenes, kind of where you have these sometimes the use of props, obviously, and repetition. You know, so what comes to mind immediately from this play is every time he goes to leave the door, maybe he gets a bit further each time, and then she kind of goes and pulls him back, and he gets more violent each time, and it kind of builds, and that's where the comedy comes from. Of the repetition, and think, oh no, not again, it can't go even further, oh again, it kind of builds and builds, and it's the same kind of with the pie. The kind of the husband gets more and more anxious that he's not going to get to eat it, and they're enjoying this pie more and more and more, and the pie is disappearing. I think there's lots of like pantomimic comedic latte kind of influences, so an actor who's good at comedy, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And it strikes me that, I mean, both would have to be very accomplished clowns and have their wits about them. there's a lot of physical business for Tib and John that, and Sir John the Priest, I think, is a bit more about verbal stuff. He's a bit more about text. He doesn't do the sort of knockabout stuff, although I'm sure he could. How do you find him, Eric?
Yeah, he's very sort of, there was a point where he stopped rhyming for a bit, and then I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. And then he goes back into rhyme when he's telling the stories, which is obviously like the comedy part, which, unless that was like the transformation point, like the reversal, which was kind of weird. But I think he's kind of, you can kind of imagine him as this guy who's not, he's the Casanova of priests, kind of. Or at least he thinks he is.
Dude gets around.
He's like, oh yes, isn't it a miracle that she's suddenly pregnant while her husband is away? And it's like, not really. It's not a miracle. It's called something else. But yeah.
Yeah, he's got some nerve to actually recount that in the house. Perhaps he's doing it to make Tib laugh. Tibbs and John's reaction would be a thing. And also, you know, it brings another metaphor to that pie they've got in the oven that the priest paid for. It's the priest's pie.
Yeah. Well, also the pail is like John trying to fix the pail and he never manages to fix it. And he just breaks it. So like, if you look at that as like a symbol of their marriage, it just kind of goes downhill.
It's true. This is possibly one of the earliest occurrences of there's a hole in the bucket. In both cases where there's a repeating gag, first when John tries to leave the house before he visits the priest, and then when he's sitting by the fire telling everyone what he really thinks, and then going, nope, just chafing the wax here. Both of those, there's a lot of repetitions of the same joke, and I like Emma's suggestion that that could be a build, but at the same time I was asking myself, is this not one repetition too often? If I was trying to direct this somehow or put it on stage, would I cut a couple of those repetitions? What do you guys think?
I think when it comes to... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, earlier in the play, they had John talk to one person in the audience and then another. You could do that. You could have him go around the entire audience and look to different people. But yeah, we probably would be okay if we got one or two of this as well, you know, kind of a combination of both.
Yeah, I think if you were to keep them all in, you'd have to find a different thing for each one, like a different way of saying it, a different intention. You know, one could be more cutting, one could be more frivolous. And then, like you say, maybe use different members of the audience. That quite struck me, actually, where earlier in the play where he directly addresses the audience, and I suddenly thought, oh, okay, that's something that obviously they're going to be able to play with throughout the script then. Right. So that gives a lot of scope as well.
He could also be doing that by the fire, you know, talking to them and trying to get some sympathy and like, no, just do wax, you know, but really trying to get the audience on his side.
Yeah, which, you know, if you were directing it, if you were blocking it, where would you put the fire? Would you put the fire in, as it were, your fourth wall? Would you put it?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good choice. Yeah, like there's no actual physical fire, but like he's just facing the audience. Yeah, you could do that. You didn't want to build a fireplace.
I guess it depends what your budget for props and set and effects is, or perhaps they might be doing this in a. You could see doing this play in a kitchen where there actually is a fireplace.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah.
It also ends very abruptly. And, you know, Eric, I want to know, how do you see that fight scene?
I think they kind of like sort of paw at each other and then maybe like the priest and the wife skip off. And maybe this, like sort of, you know, the priest holding his, like his sort of, it's called cassock. And like sort of skipping off along with the wife. Or like, I don't know, maybe they knock him to the ground or something. Because like, otherwise they wouldn't be able to disengage.
Well, at the end, John seems to think he's won the fight.
Yeah.
Because they're gone.
Yeah, but maybe it's like because they're running off. Yeah.
Right. And then running off without me.
It's the ultimate sort of double take. He's sort of like Elmer Fudd here, I think.
Well, part of me is like, man, let her go. It's
I think it's that thing of like duck season, rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season, and then something like hunter season or something. And it's like, wait, no, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah. I do sort of see him lying on the floor at the end, kind of like, yeah, and stay out, yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, that'll show you. Ow, ow. Yeah, that'll show you.
Oh, man. So then I guess he would just run off. And there was no prologue to play to this play, and there's no epilogue. John, such as we get of him, is both. And he seems to be also the only character who addresses the audience. Emma, do you or Eric ever talk to the audience directly?
I think I have an aside. I think Tip has an aside very early on, but I don't think... I think it's just the once. I think in her first scene, very early on, but then I don't think she does again after that.
Yeah, I found it. She does have one, but she also doesn't necessarily pick people out or say, you do this or you.
No.
So it's interesting. And then I think the priest almost never does, although when you're recounting your miracles, you can address the audience as much as you address Tib.
Like, well, you know, I had this woman. No, yeah. hello there.
yes, you're as it were advertising your extremely holy wares. Usually at the end of a session, we go to what are called final thoughts. It's a short play, and I'm actually quite frankly delighted with this reading. I think we've done a lovely job. Emma, do you have a final thought?
Well, like I say, I really enjoyed it. I think obviously, yes, it has problematic subject matter, but if you kind of take it to that kind of Punch and Judy extreme, you can have a lot of fun with it. And yeah, I certainly, there's a lot of scope for fun. As an actor, there's so many gems in there just to kind of be kind of vocally, physically playful, and just go really over the top with it and see what happens.
So, Lisa, final thoughts?
I could see as how a modern production would sort of turn the idea of the abusive husband on its ear and just have a lot of fun with John's all of his troubles, and then. Also at the like you were saying about how this probably was back in its day, it was probably a big hit in the court, you know, making fun of those priests, and because everybody suspected them of just all kinds of things, and a lot of it was true. So I can see how we could work it to our advantage. There's a lot here that we could work to our advantage today, or like in our frame of mind today, but I could see how it was a big hit back then. The use of the audience would be really fun though for the John character to be able to like in other early modern work that is often successful that you could do that.
Yeah, I do like one of the things that I've found that we've found reading a lot of these plays is the extent to which they talk to the audience, and I find that, you know, very refreshing. Even in the earliest medieval plays, where the first guy to enter has to say basically make room and be quiet. And from there, you often go to abusing the audience a little more. So you know that these aren't just characters talking to each other. It requires a crowd in the room, and we hope that you on the internet will also love us. Eric, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, no, there's a part of me going, it's really funny, like, as, you know, sort of physical comedy and stuff, as we've said. But then there's a part of me going, yeah, no, this is dodgy territory. Must forbidden guilty pleasure kind of thing. But, like, also, if you think about the fact that Tib was played by a young boy, and then, you know, the priest-young boy dynamic is like, yeah, that's a bit, yeah. But then if you gender flip it all, it kind of becomes very weird. I don't know, it just like, there are many ways you could stage this to make it funny in a way that is kind of, well, not necessarily appropriate, because I mean, comedy doesn't always have to be appropriate, does it? But sort of acceptable to the mores of our time.
Well, I think you're right to be cautious about, you know, gender norms and relationship norms in this play. You know, we sometimes make a joke that the past in general should carry a content warning. Is there enough humor that the relationship, there at least isn't a comedy beating, as we've seen in, for example, if you look back through our archive on YouTube, you find a play called Tom Tyler and His Wife, where that is even more Punch and Judy. There is a lot of beating that happens all round in that play, and it's played for laughs. And that is not a comfortable thing to any person in a relationship or any, it also makes me wonder whether this was an audience of mostly men and boys. Elizabeth isn't necessarily born or of age when this play was written, but if Princess Mary was listening at all, what would she think about the concept of marriage later in life? That's pretty much my final thought. I realized that when everyone else introduced themselves at the beginning, I think I might have forgotten to say who I am. Not that anyone cares.
We care.
But I am today's not Robert Crichton. I am your guest host, Liza Graham, short for Elizabeth, as in Queen. We strive, we strive. And do check out, there may be a full cast audio adaptation of this play, as of many of our others, at the Beyond Shakespeare podcast archive, available wherever you can find good podcasts. And for now, I will bid you good night. And yes, it's good night from me and from all of our readers. And we do hope that your week is lovely.